It is all yeah. there.
I mean, come on now. It's like you just met me, isn't it? But fair enough. I'll say this. It's been like 3 years since I've been able to pull out my fall gear. Because the weather's never been cold enough.
Welcome to the final faculty meeting of the fall 2019 semester. I've been reporting, so I'm time traveling again. So the meeting will come to order. To begin with, we have correction approval of the minutes. Suzanne, always working hard on our behalf. Any comments, recommendations, corrections of the minutes? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. We'll move to reports of officers. Dean Collins.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you. I submitted a report yesterday afternoon, and I want to hit a couple of highlights and then see if you have questions or comments. See our enrollment there is funny when I type that in. It's the same number as we had last year on this date. So 806 as of, actually it was one day off year over year, but roughly where we were last year. You'll also see that we'll be welcoming a new faculty member in January. We're excited to welcome Professor Uday Nilankantan. I've been practicing. We'll have a practice session sometime, maybe early 2020. But we're excited he's going to join us as instructor of biology and biology lab manager. And so thank you to the biology search committee for your hard work for getting that search finalized. As you know, we are in the middle of the associate dean search and the two more candidates coming next week. And then we have an offer out for computer science. I'm waiting to hear back from that candidate as well. Tomorrow's a big day at NASC. I may steal some thunder here, but if you're around town doing some holiday shopping, you may check out the NASC tomorrow between 9 and 4 on Main Street, Arts and Crafts sale. And then I'll hit a couple other things here. We have a save the date reminder on here for our kind of culminating 60th anniversary celebratory event on April 2nd here on campus. So there's more details about the timing and other things about that evening coming soon as we begin the new semester. I do want to say, express some gratitude to Dr. Deborah Curitan, who reminds me every day how many days she has left. So 2 weeks and one day today. I think most in this room, if not everybody in this room, would join me in this expression of gratitude. It's hard to come out of retirement once, but this is like the fourth time she's come out of retirement. And so we're grateful for all that you did for our campus since June, the end of June. She even started a week or two early. We asked for July 1st, and she started a week or two early, kind of shadowing Ron, and then kind of taking over. And so thank you so much. And you can say something if you'd like to in a few minutes. Your report time. But again, we couldn't have done this fall 2019 semester without you. We're very, very grateful for all your contributions. All right. Any comments or yes?
I do have a question, and first I want to apologize for flying in the middle of your report. You may have addressed this before I got in. If you did, I'll just give you about 10 minutes. I would like an update on the salaries.
Yes. So the salary study, the update is this. They figured in a 2 percentage point raise to update the data. We should be hearing from the chancellor any day now with implementation. So we're going to do the first year implementation starting January 2020. And the data has been updated. Those who will be impacted in the first year will happen in next month. And Tracy and I have already talked about she'll be responsible for doing the paperwork for those.
What's the there not supposed to be some presentation to the faculty?
There was, but...
So I didn't miss it.
You didn't miss it. I think it's going to be in the form of an email at this point.
So email to the campus?
To all Continental College faculty.
Faculty member, and that should come in January.
Those who will get, who will see an impact to their salary in the first year will see that in January. But I think we'll get the communication before we leave for the holidays.
So are we not going to get a briefing of the report of what happened and what they found and what the plan is?
I think that'll be delivered in the email from what I'm understanding at this point.
But only to the people who were...
No, to everybody.
To everybody, okay, thank you, I'm sorry.
Everybody will get the email, and then those who will be impacted, it's a five-year implementation, so those who will be impacted by the implementation in year one, that'll happen in January.
Well, I greatly anticipate the briefing of the report.
Me too. Me too. Yeah, so there was nothing in my report this time, because I had kind of told you kind of all I knew, and we're waiting to kind of see how it was going to be rolled out.
Yeah, I remember we were supposed to get some kind of presentation in November.
Yeah.
And then that didn't happen, so it was an appropriate question.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Others? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Morning, everybody. Well, good afternoon, everybody.
Good morning.
I want to bring a couple of important dates to your attention. One is December 23rd. That's my last one. The other one is December 18th, which is when all of your grades should be in. And I wanted to bring to your attention that for dual enrolled students, you will receive an Excel spreadsheet with their names, and you also have to provide a numeric evaluation for them. So I want you to be aware of that, and that will be coming very quickly. I also want to say that December 18th is really important for all of us, so I'll just put that right there. And then I want to say thank you so much. It has been my honor to work with you this semester. Yeah, are all of you just marvelous people to work with. It has been such a blessing to me. So I'm going to say thank you very much. I told the dean I'm your biggest cheerleader right now. So if you need me, call me. Not for this position. You just think, well, you know, I'll be visiting. I will perfect retirement this time. So thank you very much.
Any questions for Dean Pierpont?
Next trip, Panama. Panama City, Panama.
No,
it's not. Yeah, I get that.
We have to start saving now, Panama. All right,
thank you so much, Deans Collins and Pierpont. Academic Success Center.
I sent a report out this morning, and I have nothing to add to it, but I'll take questions if you have any. We will be open through Thursday of next week for students who need help studying or who are still writing papers, so make sure they know. Thank you.
Appreciate your efforts as they try to resolve all the problems of the semester in 2 days. All right, human resources.
Good afternoon. I sent a report this morning, and the only thing I would like to reiterate from that report at this moment is to remind you to check your pay stubs in January to make sure that any changes you made during open enrollment are reflected in that pay stub. If they are not, please let me know as quickly as possible so we can try to get that error resolved as soon as we come back in January. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. We appreciate your help with all this exciting paperwork processes. Yes. Goodness gracious. Laura censored court and could not be here with us today. Yes, Father.
I'm not saying.
Y'all are all helping me with my steps.
Well, I should stand up on for this one, so you can go ahead for the gap. Dr. Collins asked me to come to the meeting today to address the recent internet outages and talk about that without becoming too technical about it. So essentially, we had back-to-back outages on two Wednesdays, which is kind of unusual, and these outages are unusual anyway. But one of those we saw there in the vicinity, one of the fiber cuts. So we said it was there, but he told me to say that. But just so you understand the process that we go through, in the past in Columbia, there's an alarm that sounds when they lose connectivity to our campus. And they start doing checks on their end to try to see what's going on between like Columbia and here. When we are notified that we lose internet access, I immediately go and check all of our local equipment to make sure our routers are on, our switches are on, and everything is up and running. And then I'm going on with four alarms, like flashing alarms on our equipment. At that point, as soon as we realize that we are out and it's a problem with the circuit or it's a problem with not here, then I'll call it immediately and report to Columbia. Okay. The last two outages have been fiber cuts. And they were Segra, used to be known as Spirit Fiber. So the one specifically last Wednesday, a road crew drilled four holes in the fiber on Highway 5. So they had to dig out, I think, about 100 feet of fiber in Swanson. Typically, when there's a fiber cut, and phone companies will never say this to you, but when there's a fiber cut, once they get it and have a crew on site, their repair time, depending upon the number of fibers involved, because it could be hundreds, they do a fusion splice on two ends, and that can take anywhere from 4 to 6 hours. That's just the norm. And all that is, just so you understand, it's one of these things that we cannot control it here. We are the poor people on the end who cannot work, all of us, when we have the challenges. But I want you to know that when this does happen, we do our due diligence here to make sure that they know that we're down, and we do everything we can, you know, to let them know. Then after that, it's in the hands of Segra, it's in the hands of the Network Services Group in Columbia. We had outages back on Wednesdays, and there's another research we had back in October that was actually a problem with university equipment. It wasn't here, but it was in Columbia. Both border firewalls failed. And they actually had someone come in from Cary, North Carolina to repair them, which I would say they had bring equipment in and repair it. And I think that was on a Friday, and it was another probably 6 or 7 hour outage. There's been a lot of these recently, but still the university and phone companies, they try to operate on what we call four nines. That they want their networks to be up 99.9999% of the time. That's what everyone strives for. But I just want you to understand what happens and that we do what we're supposed to do to make sure that this repair, we make sure that they know about it. And I have direct access to the network manager when this happens. I call him directly on his cell phone. His name is Todd. I say, "Hello, Todd, this is Blake. Lancaster's out. What's going on?" And he gets on it right then. He calls Segra, and they start their process, and then they get it. They get it on working on trying to remediate it. Are there any questions about the outages or any comments or...
Blake, I didn't understand that. I went over to the highway department for business, and the highway department was out too. Are we partnered with the highway association?
Okay. When there's a fiber cut, it not only affects USC Lancaster, it affects Lancaster County School District, it affects DEC, it affects DSS, it affects probably all of state government. Because state government is using those circuits, those high-end circuits, to communicate with their partners back in Columbia. So it essentially, when they do a fiber cut, it affects all government. Sometimes it affects residential. Now, over Thanksgiving, there was comments on Facebook about my internet's out, and that could have been a part of that too, because when you cut out a big fiber line, I mean, it takes time to get all that stuff back, you know, back connected and going. But it just doesn't affect us. You know, it affects everybody around us, and that's probably some presidential customers. So, but this one of these things that I'm talking to Todd about, what can we do to try to have a backup circuit? A lot of times the backup circuit would be in that same transport. So, but he's aware of this, and this is becoming a large problem for the university as a whole, because it also, when they have those fiber cuts, it also takes out USC Upstate goes down, went down with that fiber cut. Oddly enough, Walterboro went down with that fiber cut, and Lawrence went down with that fiber cut. And there's another circuit that goes all the way from Columbia to Atlanta that is affected in that fiber. So, and there's literally millions of miles of fiber that go across, maybe tens of thousands of miles of fiber that go across the state, all along the highways and everywhere else. And it's usually, since we've had a lot of, South Carolina, we want new highways, but this is a byproduct of getting new highways, is you have road crews drilling, even through that little orange stripe on the side where it says don't drill here, but they still do it anyway, and that's what's been happening. So, that's, any more questions?
Thank you.
Pre Black Friday shopping. Any other reports of officers? Okay, we're going to move to reports of committees, system committees. I'm at the College Faculty Senate Executive Committee. Professor Jenkins.
Thank you. Updates for today. Well, if you have any questions, we have you with me. Thank you.
Okay. Rights and responsibilities.
No. I will. I will if you want to.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I just think that Lee is better at these sorts of things, but so the Rights and Responsibilities Committee did work on a couple of motions that may be relevant that you may have interest in. One of them is the earlier clarification, which I think you're aware of, but I'm not sure, I'd be happy to talk about it, which tenure and promotion cases the Grievance Committee is tasked with responding to. We spent a lot of our meeting at the last Faculty Senate meeting clarifying the language on that motion. Essentially just to make sure that it's clear that it's possible for a grievance to extend the work of the Grievance Committee into the next academic year if that's when the grievance is filed, because you may not know about the success of a tenure case or promotion case until later than when the committee would normally stop functioning. Anyway, so we made some minor adjustments. The other thing that you're probably more concerned about is this one here. This is language pertaining to a sort of ongoing discussion about the possibility and feasibility of making tenure somewhat portable across campuses for people who transfer. This came up in part because of movements at the administrative level, essentially. But it does, it could potentially affect many more people than that. We discussed the possibility of doing this, but it turns out there were concerns about creating a unified tenure structure at the PCC level that might take away some of the autonomy of local campuses. What emerged from that was essentially the need to continue bringing this up with faculty organizations, making sure that people understand what might happen, and we get a chance as the committee to understand what people's concerns are. What seems like may be a viable option is the possibility of creating joint understandings, memoranda of understanding between the faculty organizations to recognize and transfer tenure, rather than creating a change to the PCC faculty manual, which essentially would retain power at the faculty organization level and make it so individual campuses could opt out of that reciprocity if they wanted to, or if they became concerned about procedures or something like that. This is all very much still in discussion. We plan to continue that. What you see here on the screen is the result of a discussion between Sarah Miller, the chair of the committee, and the PCC higher-ups, HR, Victoria Hollins, about whether something like this would be possible from an HR and legal perspective.
Victoria Hollins's response is essentially that this would be possible. It would be possible for the faculty organizations to agree on something like this under these circumstances. So only provided that all of these things have been taken care of. We have not had a chance to discuss these things as a committee yet, so you're seeing them sort of the same way that we're seeing them, but we wanted you to be aware of them as we go. So these are different requirements that would be that would have to be in place before something like that would even be feasible. Would you like me to read them out? I will not do so then. But I would be happy to take any questions. I yield my time.
I have a question. Hammond, Lancaster. So, when we hired you, we did not have to do all this. Right? We didn't have to do a search.
We did.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
We did.
Yeah,
yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'll
Oh, yeah.
I know that we have moved people.
But the difference was when he came in, we voted as a.
The faculty organization
voted to extend his tenure in.
And also, I think my thought also was viewed by the higher administration. And finally, Board of Trustees for transferring my tenure.
Correct. All the way.
Okay. Sorry, Tracy, go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I was going to reiterate with what Lee just said, that it wasn't, the vote on this campus is not what transferred his tenure. It was the Board of Trustees' agreement to that, or approval of that vote, I guess.
So that is a change to the tenure process where the Board of Trustees is always the final vote on the tenure. The granting tenure promotion, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you. I appreciate that. All right, no other questions on that?
It's okay.
Thank you.
I have no new report for the System Affairs Committee.
Okay, so for welfare, DMP workshop is on January 17th. We will continue with the same format as last year with adding the third year review table. So if you have any questions about that, let us know. Our webpage, the welfare webpage, is under reorganization right now. So if you have any suggestions, please let us know to better make things available for you or things that you may feel like should be on that webpage that's not at this time. The Duffy, Plowler, and Shaw Award nominations have been sent in. Candidates will submit applications by January 31st. And we are also looking into making minor changes to that process where the welfare chair cannot be nominated for the awards due to a conflict of interest that is not in the rules at this time. So that came up during discussion. The welfare survey will go out later this year, similar format, except we will be adding additional data. We're in the process of discussing that, but it looks like campus will be added back in. But we'll be taking other identifiers out so no one can be identified by their answers. And the question of workplace bullying and harassment will be added. Any questions? Thank you.
Christine Sixth Runhart asked me to poll faculty organization to see how many people might be attending the TNP workshop. I'm not sure why, because they're going to ask for RSVPs anyway. But if you don't mind saying, if you are interested in attending, this is not a firm commitment. Obviously, the TNP workshop on the 17th, she wanted it. I just count. Okay, thank you. Columbia Faculty Senate, Shimsey sent a report. Anybody else from? Okay.
I have a question about that report. Who do I ask my question for?
Who remembers who our other senators are off the top of their heads?
I'm one, but I haven't been able to.
Okay.
15 because of class.
What's your question? We'll see who
they
know.
My question is, in the report that Shimsie sent, she said it was that there were discussions on modifications to the Board of Trustees, and that seems very, very vague. I'd like more information about what that means.
The question is, there was discussion about modifications to the structure of Board of Trustees, and Fran is interested in any clarification if I can offer to that point. Chris?
I don't know about this because of Sen stuff, but I read a newspaper article about something connected to that, and my loose understanding is that the Columbia faculty are considering some sort of motion to expand the number of members, or sorry, to contract the number of members on the board in response to the Kaplan hiring.
That was reported in the state newspaper.
So see the state. The state knows more than we do. Any other questions? All right. Are there any other system committees? Local committees, evaluation committee.
The changes we made in the spring relative to the changes of the faculty evaluation system. We needed to make changes to reflect those changes in the first year review form.
So there weren't many, I don't think there were any really substantive changes other than changing the language in the form from the previous 5-point sort of like system to the current system. We're using that one, effective, non-effective. So as Lisa's taking the document out, this is a document everybody, it was submitted out earlier. It just reflects the change in language is almost exactly the same from the language that is in the fifth about peer review and the timetable and all the language about rating scale to change that language from the old system to the new system, this report. So we're submitting this document to be approved by the board, hopefully to be viewed not as substantive changes since the previous changes have been already approved on the 5th, so that when the first year faculty that are submitting their files for review can use this new form instead of the old one. Any questions about that?
Thank you. So this is a motion coming from committee. It requires no second. The committee is asking that the motion be ruled non-substantive. And I'm inclined to agree with that. So most of these changes are found at a college from regional campus. I had a like English teacher attack and put a hyphen in a bunch of places. The committee pulled out the criteria here, the percentages here, and here at the end, took out the weighted scale, changed the, took out the averaging. This is consistent with the document we approved in spring. So I'm gonna rule this non-substantive. Y'all can override me if you don't like that. Okay, so we'll discuss it under new business. Are there any other local committee reports? There is no unfinished business that I'm aware of. So new business. We're here for discussion then. Any discussion, questions about the proposed first year faculty peer review policy updated by the evaluation committee? Right, Gary, no, oh, excuse
Sorry.
Me. That's okay.
So my sense is that the removal of the percentages is really about there not being a final score. Is it in the spirit of this thing that we're not going to think about those three areas with the same weight when we're doing evaluation, or is it changing that more substantially?
You mean in terms of this form versus the fifth?
Well,
or just in general?
I guess since there's no overall score anymore.
Right.
This is what we're talking about. But are we also talking about sort of reimagining expectations in terms of that 60-20-20 sort of, you know, if we're not thinking about the split that way, are we expecting different kinds or different amounts of service or different kinds or different amounts of scholarship, for instance?
I don't think so. I would say I don't think it's a substantive change in the balance. That's just my opinion.
Okay, but if that information is now removed and these are documents that we're asking new faculty to use as guidance, how are they to know?
I do not want to repeat that. But I will if y'all couldn't hear me, sorry.
I think that's worth repeating.
Okay, so if the 60-20-20 language is removed from these documents that we're asking our new faculty to use as guide, then how are they to know that there's a 60-20-20 if it's not written anywhere?
I'd like to address that as a former member of the committee and as someone who does a lot of TP work. That 60-20-20 was only for local peer review. It is not a criteria that was ever in the faculty manual. In fact, I think it's confusing to a lot of people. We've already removed it from the annual peer review document. So that came out in the spring, and when we were evaluating, that was gone. Partly that was gone because it was a numeric calculation. So for you to have a score of 60-20-20, you had to have a number and calculate in that way. So we've already removed it, and it wasn't in the faculty manual to begin with. It was a local campus expectation. The last paragraph on the second page here, faculty members should note within the category of service, you see on the district sets a high priority on service to the community. That was something that was held over from the original version, that gave a priority to service. This came from a long time ago when people were all like, should 25% of your score should be service? What percent of your work? So the committee that was working on that was calculating it, trying to just, I think, basically say scholarship and service should count the same. And our faculty manual criteria don't say that. They say scholarship and service are both important and increasingly more so when combined with teaching. So in my opinion, this is more consistent with the faculty manual.
I would agree. But if we have reviewers who are still using that formula, then that formula has to be made known.
Do we have reviewers who are still using that formula? Fran wonders if we have reviewers that are still using that formula, how is that formula
communicated? Maybe I misunderstood Mark's response. Mark, could you clarify your response to that question?
I think Lisa, maybe I miscommunicated. Lisa sort of, I think, accurately described what the perspective is from the committee. So Lisa's perspective was probably clearer than what I described. But
what I was hearing was, yes, we're still sort of using that, but no, it's not printed anywhere.
No, that's not what I intended.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. No, thank you. I'm sorry to delay the meeting.
Now that's important.
My apologies, I'm with the microphone. I miss a lot of the discussion, so cut me some slack on that. Are we having a substantive change where the tradition of and the rule of 4 years that emphasizes teaching more than service and scholarship is now a thing of the past? How are we will 60-20-20 ever be used in official decision making?
60-20-20 was only for a local peer review. It's not consistent with the criteria for tenure and promotion that are in our faculty manual.
Does it still remain a local practice for peer review?
No. If this policy is passed, and we already passed the version for all of peer review in the spring, it removes that scale. So this is our current policy that we approved in February 2019. That scale's gone from here. So there's not a number. There's not a number for each of three categories. There's not an overall number. There's not a percentage that says your teaching counts 60%, your service is 20, your scholarship is 20. Instead, it says that you're using the criteria of the faculty manual and how they define that. Teaching is a primary consideration in tenure and promotion decisions. Service and scholarship are both important, and increasingly more so when considered together with teaching. I don't have that exactly right, but the language of the manual governs the policy now rather than that 60-20-20, which I've served on system TMP a lot, and it was always confusing for people. They're like, where is this 60-20-20? Are we supposed to? It's not. That was a specific thing to this peer review policy.
I guess
the only thing that I would, I guess, sort of add to this is, while this may very well be a valid question that Chris kind of started, I wonder if this wasn't already addressed in this, in when we passed this last motion, right? There very well may be some questions, but this isn't about actually passing this aspect of the motion. Like, we've done this part already, and it seems to me like this is just updating the language to match the motion that we've already discussed and passed in the spring. And there may very well be some uncertainties or questions that we have about it, but that's not what this is actually about.
When I'm a reviewer, mostly when I review a document, I review based on what my expectation is for my own work. So, but when you submit a application file, no matter it's fifth file or third year file, would that be nice to have some type of expectation listed first, so the reviewer can review that file based on that expectation? And also for the percentage, is there any similar number for instructor peer review? We know that scholarship is not required, but is there a similar number, like percentage-wise, for instructor peer review?
80-20.
So it was for instructors, 80% teaching, 20% service. Scholarship was not a requirement, but instructors could choose to be reviewed with scholarship. When we voted on this motion in the spring, we eliminated that scale for both peer review for tenure track faculty and tenured faculty and instructors. So that scale is gone completely. There are criteria for evaluating files, and those are in the faculty manual. And in my, you know, personal, like, humble opinion, I think this is actually more beneficial for us, because let's say you have an extremely strong service record, your tenured faculty, and you want to focus on service and not so much on research, you're not being penalized, your service area can weigh a little more in the consideration of the faculty, the review committee. That's not valuable, obviously, for tenure track faculty who need to be really careful and make sure their scholarship portfolio is very strong. I think it gives some flexibility But it is more consistent with the language of the manual.
But these are not questions germane to this motion.
Right, and that's why I rule it non-substantive, because we already passed the document that eliminated the scale and changed it to effective, not effective.
Right.
So this is just bringing the first year review policy into congruence with that, which we just didn't have time to do in the spring as that committee was finishing its work to do it accurately. Any other questions or discussion? Okay, so call question. All those in favor of this motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Is there any other new business?
I have a concern that came up just yesterday with my classes, and it has to do with course evaluations. I don't know the proper procedure to introduce that. I'm not on the agenda here today, nor has this been brought to any committee. So can you tell me how to do this?
We can do this in announcements.
Okay, thank you.
Brandon has an announcement.
I do have an announcement, and here it is. I need a mic. Okay, so yesterday in my classes, I was urging my students to use their online course evaluation. Can y'all hear me? And several of them, starting with a dual enrollment student, said they weren't getting the links for the online course evaluations. And when this dual enrollment student brought it up and said, I'm dual enrollment, I never get them. Another student who is seeking a Palmetto College degree said, well, I don't ever get them either. Sometimes they're in my email, sometimes they're in Blackboard, sometimes they're in neither. So it sounds like we have some kind of problem with students getting access to the online evaluations. On top of that, there seems to be a greater overall problem with course evaluations in that we use this two-way system. Some are on paper, some are online. Some students think that if they ignore that online course evaluation, that eventually we're going to break down and hand them a paper one in class. And they don't understand that that their professor is choosing the method to evaluate the class. They think they're going to get another shot at it in class eventually if they just wait long enough. This all seems to point, well, at first I want to ask you all if y'all are having trouble, are you hearing these same kinds of problems? And if you are, I think this is something that needs to be discussed and studied and maybe reevaluated. Are we effectively evaluating our courses? And as I told them, my students yesterday, when I asked them to do this, and when I tell them that I'm using their results, I want them to know that their results are being counted. And I'm not sure they are. That's all I want.
Anybody else having a similar problem? Some problems.
Is there not a way to get a response back in the College of Nursing? All of ours are online, and they send us every other day? Every day that tells us how much response back we've gotten per class. And it'll say you have 32 people and you've had 12 responses, which is, because their goal is to have a 65% response rate. And they also, when they send it out to the students, they send us what they send the students. So it gives us the link so we can post it on our Blackboard. And then it'll give them a step-by-step how to access it, how to do it. And I haven't got anything from USCO, so I don't know. Mine are all online, and I don't know if anybody did them or not. So I know that in Columbia.
No, we get no along the way response. Just
post-class.
But it would be not, there's got to be a way they can do that.
Yeah, the online classes,
too.
They're
doing it for nursing, yeah.
I don't get anything. Mine are online, and I don't.
Oh, I don't get it.
Oh, my class isn't online.
I get one that says they're woefully under.
My class isn't online, but the evaluations are online.
Yeah, I mean, my class is online, but it's only a Lancaster section. At this point, I don't have, mine's not in a Palmetto section yet, and so I don't get anything response back that says they've done it or they haven't, or.
So you don't know who did it, you just know how many people completed it. And it's nice to know, because then you can say, I'm going to leave you 5 minutes, to, and I'll leave, so please.
Yeah, I have the same issue also, but mine was a Palmetto College class, and I called Jean, and Jean fixed it. So I don't know exactly what she did, but she said she had to go in and delete something and then re-upload something. I'm not really sure, but... I had so many emails from students saying that they couldn't access the link, and I offer extra credits. So that's probably why they care. But I don't know what she did to fix it, but that's how I resolved that issue in my online class. So I don't think it's unique to your class. I think it's, I don't know what the problem is, but.
I know with the number part of it, you can ask Pam.
Tell everybody.
I know if you're trying to look for numbers, you can talk to Pam and she'll tell you how many percentages have done it. That's what I've done to impress my students.
Well, that's great, except for the fact that then Pam's going to be inundated with people asking her that. It sounds like there's enough concern around this issue on various levels of this that it's something maybe the evaluation committee needs to look at in the coming months or a year.
Well, I don't know where this problem might be because I've been using paper evaluations, but I talked to the mother of one of my students who was having trouble, or her son was having trouble getting his evaluation, his online evaluations. And that young man's mother is the person who distributes the evaluations to us. So it was Pam. So Pam's son was having trouble. So I'm thinking this may be a problem. I don't know who controls the online evaluations. Is that our campus or is that?
Yes, Columbia that Pam works with.
So that it may be the problem as far as the online ones.
Yeah.
It's down there, where a lot of our problems.
And it sounds like that there can be certain settings configured, like Ann is talking about, that we can get data that we're not getting. So maybe we can explore.
Well, and maybe
some of those settings.
Maybe those kind like. Addressing those problems may alleviate some of the concerns of fully going online that may help us to come to a consensus on a consistent method. Because I don't have any data on this, but it seems for our students, if it was a consistent method, one way or another, we would get more involvement and more completion of those surveys if they knew that that was the only way they were getting them.
So Dean Collins indicates there may be a way to change the settings. Sarah suggests the evaluation committee may want to review how widespread the problem is.
And a little side note, anybody who's using the paper evaluations, every single one of my classes told me that somebody else had given them incorrect directions, that they are to put an X in the one that they choose. If they fill the entire thing in, that is a correction. So it doesn't count. So.
And if they're filled in pencil, they will not go through.
Yes.
And so then that counts as somebody that did not turn it in. And they just throw it completely out.
And there are problems with consistent ways that students are filling out forms, papers, or in boxes. It sounds like the evaluation committee may want to have a conversation with the new associate dean.
I have an announcement. The announcement is all paper evaluations are due in the office today.
No.
Yes.
Dr. Puritan reminds us that all paper evaluations are due in the office today and right. Also probably the last day of school. Other announcements, yes.
Graduation with leadership distinction applications
are due January 31st. Students planning to pursue GLD have the option to either complete University 401, which is a one credit hour class, or find an advisor to work with independently. Working independently on an e-portfolio drastically shortens their timeline, making those e-portfolios due right around spring break time, rather than having the full 16-week semester to complete that. So January 31st, you can send students my way or to Laura Carnes to get information about completing their applications.
Graduation with Leadership Distinction Seed is before the end of January. Other announcements? Yes.
I was just going to say that if you are interested in donating toys or cash to the Secret Angel that we're doing for USCL students with children, just let me know. We have about six different students with, I'm not exactly sure how many children we have right now. Some of the things on the list, most of the things are clothes. We have a few toys. We have some faculty that already donated cash to buy the tablets, which was so good because I was like, how are we going to buy tablets? But if you're interested in participating, just let me know. Students, we've already kind of closed the application, so we'll be purchasing the items this week, and that's it.
So if you're interested in contributing and supporting students with children who need help at the holidays, cash or gifts, please see Susan. Other announcements? Yes.
1 week from today at 12 noon at the Native American Studies Center, Dr. Steve Criswell will be giving a lunch and learn lecture. Jesus, Mary, and Frosty is on the folk art of Christmas yard art. It should be a very good one.
Jesus, Mary, and Frosty next Friday noon. Don't miss it. Other announcements?
Mine is not so much an announcement. It may be new business. It's of a matter that's actually fairly light. I mean, I'm not resident to bring it up, but I'm not bringing this up lightly, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm curious as to how many other people have had this similar experience as well. And I'll say this, like within the last 6 months, I have heard of numerous cases in informal word of mouth, like reporting from students of sexual harassment that our undergrads have encountered in various forms. Both of these come, some of them related to our soccer team, others in just the experience of being in the classroom. And some of these, the ones that I have heard of, I've already talked with our administrators about. But it seems to me like this is, in the handful of informal conversations that I have had with other faculty in the last few days, it seems to me that there is almost, I'm wondering how ubiquitous this is actually a problem on our campus. Like, do other people hear students reporting this kind of activity happening to them?
Really, nobody wants the bike. A lot of those reports, I imagine, would be happening in confidential settings. Dean Collins, do you want to speak about that here?
So, I can say that we have dealt with incidents of alleged sexual harassment or anything that would fall kind of under Title IX. We use our kind of the system that Palmetto College has designed for all four campuses, which is if it is a faculty or staff member who has a complaint or a visitor to campus who has a complaint, they report to Director of HR, Tracy, who meets with them individually and who talks with them and offers resources to them. And then if it is a student who alleges a complaint or alleges activity and wants to file a complaint, they direct that to the Office of Academic and Student Affairs, where both the Associate Dean and, depending on the case, sometimes Laura Carnes also sits in as a second person, a second administrative type person, to listen to the complaint issue. So those are dealt with as they come to us. Both types of complaints are offered resources and follow up as necessary. And so that's the official part of dealing with that.
Right. I'm asking, like, how routine of an issue is this? Like, to what extent is this, I mean, as quiet as it's kept, you know, a normative part of how we do business?
2 to 3 issues a year.
Okay. That get reported.
That get reported.
Right.
And that the person wants us to follow up on.
Right. Well,
so we'll document it, but
right.
They will determine pretty much if they want to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just document the report.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll follow through based on what the university says. But sometimes we're asking to step out.
We have a yearly.
Right. Okay.
We have a year. Also, in addition to that, we have a yearly report that we submit to Domino College that chronicles all of the issues that have been reported and that we have done investigation on.
So when you say 2 to 3, is that 2 to 3 that want you to follow up?
2 to 3 that I've gotten.
That say anything?
Yeah, that have come to me.
Okay. Through.
Yeah. Two to three total.
I'm wondering then how many other folks on campus who may not, where this may not go directly to administrative levels, are hearing about this? Matt?
I don't know that there's a way to know what's not reported or documented.
I had a case in one of my classes where a student wrote in the beginning of the semester that he felt uncomfortable sitting where he was sitting because this girl, he didn't feel safe around her, right? Mm-hmm. And he wrote this in a note. And I didn't know what to do with it, but I had attended that harassment seminar from last spring or summer or something. And I know I'm supposed to do something, but I didn't know exactly what to do. And so I just went over to Star Hall and just started walking the halls and ended up in the counseling department with her Ernesta. She's really good, and she knew this student and she knew about the problem, and so she talked to both students and got it all straightened out and followed up with them. So it wasn't a sexual harassment thing, but it was kind of a scary situation for one student who didn't feel safe mm-hmm. in the room. And so, you know, she guided me through that. But I don't hear about sexual harassment things.
We all have a responsibility to report anything that we hear from a student or, for that matter, a colleague. Although I may have mistaken.
Not at all. So, just if you'd like to review that Title IX page on our website, it does direct. It does give information on how to direct the complaints, like I just mentioned, to HR and to Associate Dean of Academic and Student Affairs. And they're the ones who can be responsible for making sure the resources and the resolution is taken care of. But the resources are on that page too. You know, everything from the hospital to counseling on our campus. So Phil, if you want to review that over the holidays, that would be a good idea. And that's updated and should be consistent with all 4 Palmetto College campuses.
And remember, too, that if a student says something to you and they ask you to keep it in confidence, we cannot do that. It is against the law for us to do that. If a student tells us they are in danger or they're being harassed, it is our legal obligation to report that. So please make sure to pay attention to that, because we have to be strong advocates for our students, and we don't want what you're talking about to be happening on our end. No further discussion on that right now. And if you continue, I'm sure to pay attention to that closely. So this sounds really like a bad transition, but the reading groups met at noon, and we are going to meet on Tuesday, the 7th of January at noon, to discuss our books. So if you are part of those groups, I'm going to send out an email to everybody who has all the books so you know who they all are, and that's the plan right now. We'll probably be in this room Classes won't have started yet, so we can meet here, and if we get too loud and rowdy, we can move to other rooms. Also, Stephen and I have been working on trying to arrange a faculty field trip to see the Van Gogh exhibit in Columbia on January 10th in the afternoon. If you are interested in that, there's some interest in that. I'm going to send out an email. Please let me know. We have the band reserved, and that seats 15, is that right?
The big one does, yes.
Okay, so we have
and
the,
I can drive it.
And Stephen can drive it, so you're living on the edge. So that will be coming out shortly. Other announcements?
I have one more. In one of my giddier moments, I think I promised you that I was so thrilled that you were number one again and number two in the nation that I would increase my money to my scholarship. So here's $1,000.
Any other announcements? Holiday party is next Tuesday. Okay. All right. Motion adjourned. Second. All right. Happy holidays. Good break. End of semester.
Adam, man, what's been up?